On today's episode of The Good Word, Dan Werke joins us from the LA Times to talk about LeBron testing free agency this offseason, why Zach LaVine makes sense as a trade target for the Lakers, and if the Clippers can carve out more turf in LA. All that and much more on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcasts. Today, we are joined by my Chicago-born, LA-bred friend and Michigan State Spartan. He is a Lakers beat writer for the LA Times. He took a day off from work last week in a show of solidarity. He is always also the host of the Times Lakers show. His name is Dan Werke. Dan, Michigan State Spartan.
That's sort of true. I mean, that's mostly true, right? I was a Michigan State Spartan for 3+ years and then eventually became an Eastern Illinois Panther. Can you name, Vinny, can you name the NBA Eastern Illinois Panther?
Ooh.
Because you are great at this. You, by the way, you are excellent at this. Like, you are a very good historical mind. I will give you a hint. He was the starting center of an NBA Finals team in the 1990s.
Starting center of an NBA Finals team in the 1990s. So we got.
So think about how I asked that question, too. That's your other hint. I didn't say NBA champion. I said starting center of an NBA Finals team in the 1990s. And by the way, I believe in the 1980s as well.
Okay, so that means Lakers lost in 91, Portland lost in 92, Phoenix lost in 93. Oliver Miller? No, Oliver Miller wasn't it. No, Oliver. No, Mark West.
Went to Arkansas. I don't know Mark West. No. Portland.
Kevin Duckworth?
Kevin Duckworth.
Well, you cleared your throat when I said.
Oh, on Phoenix.
Yes, yeah, Phoenix. Gotcha.
I decided I was going to give you some. Yeah, Kevin Duckworth. Other famous Eastern Illinois. Tony Romo. Tony Romo. Jimmy Garoppolo. John That's Malkovich.
What? Is this day in white history?
Kevin Duckworth again. Kevin Duckworth. Chicago Bulls assistant coach Henry Dammerkamp.
Oh, look at that. Now, that's a blast. Look at you. Look, Dan is a encyclopedia of great information. Notice, y'all, he didn't name any of the Michigan State Spartans because he doesn't want me to give out any of the Spartan jokes that I just got loaded in the chamber from my Michigan State friends.
It's been a rough year, Vinny.
Rough. Oh, man, I'm going to leave that one alone. Rough being it's a year. A hard year. Yeah, there we go. It's been a rough year, rough-ish, for the team that you cover, the Los Angeles Lakers.
Weird year, right?
In-season tournament champions, you hang a banner for that. There's actually a marker on the basketball reference page for the Lakers winning the in-season tournament. So they've gotten the basketball reference people on board, right?
Did Adam Silver reach out on that too? They put the thumb down and say, hey, we're going to need you basketball reference to get on board?
Wow. Is that where the banner came from?
I will just say that I think that there was a desire for it to be celebrated with some level of reference.
Gotcha. Makes sense. So I was watching the Lakers last night. They were the last game on after all the football games. And they blew out Portland, as you would expect. But a really fascinating piece for me as a whole, he's always been fascinating, is D'Angelo Russell. Yep. His name is always in the trade discussions. In January, he's been really, really good. The last five games, he's averaging, 27-6 on, 56, 54 from three. Like, he's literally stepping forward. And they've been trying to figure out who is this, I won't say third star, but big complimentary piece to LeBron and Anthony Davis. But on the other side of it, his name is consistently, Dan, in the trade discussions. What do you make of, A, his performance, and B, if the Lakers are going to make some sort of a move, is he the number one piece that is going to be on the chopping block?
Yeah, so let's start with kind of we'll start with the first part of that question. I've been really impressed how he's played in this stretch. He missed a couple games with a bruised tailbone. He injured himself trying to take a charge, which in itself is was a surprising sort of D'Angelo Russell type play. That's not the kind of thing he normally does. But you know, he has come back and he's given them a lot of offensive pop. And, you know, we talked to him last night and he said kind of while he was out, he kind of came to the conclusion that you have to be aggressive if you're going to play with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, that you can't just force feed those guys the ball, because if you do, you're easy to guard, and that makes them easy to guard. So you like sort of like, you know, a little bit of like tough love almost, where it's like, you know, the best way to help LeBron and Anthony Davis is to not pass to them. News that I'm sure, by the way, that those guys loved hearing kind of through. But I think the point is sort of like you need to be a threat, right?
Right.
He's played great these last five games. I think, you know, we'll see kind of what the long term sort of equity is. He's an incredibly talented basketball player on the offensive end. He's got a great jump shot, really, really slick, sort of like old school type layup package for a guy who doesn't really get off the floor.
Right.
Like he's not a jumper type of a player. He's just very plays angles and things like that. So
I think he's a really good passer. I think I saw that in college at Ohio State, that I thought he could have been a generational passer, and it just hasn't
great
come that way
so
far.
Pocket passer. He throws like, you know, like last night, the two big LeBron plays, right, are the dunk on the 2-0 dunk where, you know, he caught a bounce lob, and then there was another kind of lefty contorting dunk. Both were off passes from D'Angelo Russell. The pocket pass that led to the lefty dunk in particular was really, really slick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, really nice bounce pass. Now, look, to the second question, yeah, he's the guy. He is in these trade, and he's there almost through no fault of his own, but we can get to the flaws too. He's there. One, his contract is such where he's about $18 million. He's got a player option for next season. It's not an expiring, but when it comes to like the contracts the Lakers have to move, he's about as close to an expiring as it gets. The biggest expiring they have is LeBron James. The next biggest expiring contract they have is Taurean Prince at $4 million. So there is a big gap. You know, so when you're talking about these trade sort of machinations and things like that, it's usually Rui Hachimura, D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves would be in that conversation if that was something the Lakers were entertaining. They're not. But it's like the math, right? Like just to make the math work, Gabe Vincent, it's got to be some combination of those guys to get significant stuff back, because the Lakers are looking for significant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is kind of what the shopping list calls for. And so that's kind of why he's in those trade talks. Now, he's played great these last five games. He had a miserable December. He did not play well, moved to the bench. The jumper was off. He is a guy.
The confidence looked off.
Yeah, which is weird for him. He is a supremely confident player, mm-hmm. right? Like, definitely, he made an all-star team. He's a guy who carries himself like he made an all-star team. Like, I think, Vinny, it was kind of interesting because, he's sort of symptomatic of the Lakers' bigger issues, which is, like, they just don't have enough two-way players.
Mm, yep.
You know, and I think that was one of the issues that as Darvin Ham has tried to kind of find the right recipes and, you know, switching up lineups and dealing with injuries and all these different things that he's been sort of rightfully and in a lot of ways criticized for, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, like the problem is like, you know, if you play D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves together in your backcourt, you have some defensive issues, you know, which is true. And I think there's been some shopping around and, you know, you wonder if like maybe that's a position you can upgrade with a better two-way player, or maybe a guy who's a little more consistent.
Well, here's the thing. And there were names that you had, and I found it interesting in Dan's last piece, or the second to last piece, when he did like a big picture thing for the Lakers, which came, I believe, yesterday, probably the Sunday morning piece in LA, where Tyus Jones, Daniel Gafford, Terry Rozier, Royce O'Neal, Dorian Finney-Smith. So we got one big who's a shot blocking, rim protecting, finish over the rim guy. That's Gafford. Terry Rozier, who's a tough, rugged, you know, he may not be as smooth offensively. Might not be as smooth as D'Angelo Russell, but he might give you a little bit more in a toughness category. Tyus Jones, who's more of a traditional, you know, set the table point guard, but you might not have to worry about him. And of course, O'Neal and Finney Smith, rugged,
plug and play wings.
Yeah. Plug and play wings.
And the guy at the top of that list too, Vinny, the two names at the top of that list, right? DeJounte Murray and Bruce Brown.
Yes. In addition to the third player that wasn't mentioned, because I don't know if there's much traction there, Zach LaVine with the Bulls, Alex Caruso with the Bulls. You know, so much of that talk has cooled down over the past month or so. Zach now being out for at least a week with an ankle sprain. The Bulls have been playing better, which you know a lot about with that franchise having been from Chicago.
Yeah.
Is there a likely scenario? Besides, for people who don't know, DeJounte Murray and Zach LaVine are both repped by Clutch Sports, Rich Paul, LeBron James. You get the connection. But it's taking that aside.
Anthony Davis, Jared Vanderbilt, Cam Reddish.
Yes. The Clutch Sports Lakers. Yeah, you got a whole bunch of them, right?
Yeah.
Aside from those two names, Dan, is there a likely path that you can see them going out of, whether it's those five names or the other two that you can see the Lakers going and getting themselves out of this game above 500, game below 500 in this sort of 9-10 play-in range?
Yeah, I think DeJounte Murray to me makes the most sense for them, right? I think there really are kind of a couple different paths they could take, which is, you know, this is going to sound convoluted, Vinny, so please try to keep me focused on this. It all drives to the fact, right, that the playbook for winning with a 39-year-old superstar in the NBA is not really been written. It is like sort of happening on the fly, right? Like he is the most win now player in the history of the league. That you still have this guy in year 21 in LeBron James who moves the needle for you on a game to game basis where you believe at any moment he can be the best player on the floor against anybody. Like it's true. It's just a factual thing. Now you don't know, can he do it 16 times in a playoffs? I don't think so anymore. But if he does it seven, can you fill in the other gaps, I guess, right? Like that is the calculus for the Lakers. And that's also against the backdrop of, you know, he's a guy, he's got a $50 million player option this year. I think
we're going to get to that. Go ahead.
Okay. So, but I think like against the backdrop of regardless of player option or not, he's in his 21st NBA season.
Right.
You just don't know when the next step is the cliff.
Right.
You don't know.
The cliff or the injury.
Yeah, it could be anything, really. You just have no real. So you're constantly asking yourself, and I know the Lakers are asking themselves these questions about, like, is it worth it? And you know, are we close enough to push these chips in? They want to be aggressive. They want to maximize this window with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, particularly with those two guys playing as well as they're playing. There is like sort of a, you know, if we overpay for the wrong player, though, It is the type of thing that can set them back, you know, years on years on years in the future. So I think with that is sort of the ground rules. I do think that there are a couple of paths. I laid them out in the piece you mentioned. I think DeJounte Murray to me is the cleanest path. He is a player whose timeline fits Anthony Davis and Austin Reeves. He's under contract at a good number. He plays point guard. Can play the two though well. Hasn't defended at the level he used to in San Antonio, but a guy who has that capability. I think that if you put him on a better team in a better situation, I think the expectation is that the defensive intensity and output will pick up. And, you know, he's what, 27, 28 years old? He's in the middle of it. Like that is, again, we mentioned
D'Lo. That's a sweet spot.
It's an all-star level player who seemingly fits around what you're trying to do. The knock, right, is that is he the kind of shooter that you would want to put around LeBron James? That is sort of the question. Shot it very well this year. Is that real or not is sort of the question with DeJounte Murray. So that's path one. And that path represents more of a all-in type push, right? Like, I don't think the Lakers would empty the entirety of their assets in that type of trade. But, you know, from my understanding, what they've already talked about was, you know, D'Angelo Russell, a first-round pick in 2029, Jalen Hood-Schifino, and, you know, maybe some other draft stuff, a swap or some seconds or something like that, right? the issues.
So let's reset before that. Let's reset before you go to path two, because you got path two, and I want to get people on track before we go to the next one.
Sure.
Everything that I've heard on the intel, not Lakers specific, but just DeJounte Murray, is the Hawks are looking for multiple draft picks.
Because they spent three to get them.
Right. And that's always the danger, is you're trying to get back what you spent, and you don't want to have egg on your face and not have the player and not have the picks. I think they know they can't get three, but I think they at least want two. If my math is correct, or at least my intel, I'm going to say intel, but information is correct. This year is a swap, but for the AD trade from the Pelicans. This is an option swap?
This pick is a hostage. It's an option to take. So like, this pick is like, the Pelicans can either have 24 or they can have 25. So like, the Lakers are like a little bit in like Stepien rule hell on this front, where like, and this is another thing the Lakers are considering too, right? Is like, they can either make this trade now, right, and put one first round pick into play, or on draft night, they could put three first round picks into play. And does three first round picks get you into, say, the Donovan Mitchell type conversations or whatever, right? Like, is three enough for that? I'm not quite sure, but there is a jump in tier of player once you start being able to throw, you know, three plus swaps. We've seen that. I think so, Vinny, to answer your question, yeah, I mean, my intel on DeJounte Murray was, you know, the Knicks were in conversation for this, and this got aggregated. I think it got aggregated in the wrong way. The point was, when the Knicks talked to Atlanta about DeJounte Murray, Atlanta wanted Emmanuel Quickley and a first round pick and a player.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the Lakers don't really have the player. I mean, they have Austin Reeves, and Atlanta would love Austin Reeves. They don't want to trade Austin Reeves, because if you trade Austin Reeves for DeJounte Murray, I think you're doing some things better on your team, but like, you're still
you're losing something. You're losing a good cap number.
Yes, exactly. So I don't think I think the goal would be to have those guys together. So the Lakers have a couple of options here. The other impediment, too, is that if Atlanta wants to do this type of trade, they would like to take back, my understanding, is expiring money. And D'Lo has this player option. Now, do you reroute him to a third team? You know, can you work something with, like, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie's basically an expiring on, like, the ballparky, the same number? Is there a way to do something like that? Toronto has some expiring. San Antonio has some expirings. You can move some stuff around and teams could be incentivized. But the tricky part is, like, the Lakers don't have a lot to incentivize, right? Like, they've got some bad seconds from the Clippers. Like, they're not stockpiled. What they could do to create, maybe, if they decide, again, this is the path they want to go down and they really want to create a second first round pick. And if their pitch to Landry Fields is that, you know, Jalen Hood-Schifino is a first round pick. We just took him. Like, he counts. Now, teams will tell you it's like a car. Like, once you drive that pick
off the lot, baby,
like,
it ain't no new car no more.
It depreciates, right? And then the Lakers, again, could be like, all right, well, how about do Max Christie and Jalen Hood-Schifino equal a first round pick? And Atlanta might say yes. I don't think the Lakers want to do that, those two players plus the first round pick, because that sort of represents everything. So what they could maybe do, and I thought was really interesting what Lawrence Frank did in the James Harden trade, is maybe you take a couple of your swaps that you have access to and you package those and you pick up a, you know, a lottery protected first from a team that has a stockpile. You know, I think Sam Presti's, you know, Pearl Jam ringtone just went off, but like some version of that, maybe you create a second first that way. But again, I still think this represents like a significant asset push for a player that might not get you that much closer to winning a title this year. Maybe this isn't the team and this isn't the season. The reason why I think the Murray thing makes a little more sense, there's long-term equity, right, at least with him. Right. So that's, I think, the first path.
Right.
Right.
The second path
is that you take Rui Hachimura, D'Angelo Russell, and you farm them off into role players that you think fit you better and fit what you need better. So that would be the Tyus Jones, Daniel Gaffords of the world. That would be, you know, Colin Sexton. That would be Malcolm Brogdon. You know, the Brooklyn guys. Maybe it's a Dinwiddie, Royce O'Neal trade, or Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith trade, where this represents more of like, just a little bit of like a shuffling than it is some grand identity change, you know? And I think like there's some appetite for that. I think there's a feeling that you talk to some people within the organization that like this is a team that just needs to be like reshaken, like, you know, like wake up a little bit. And a trade tends to do these types of things, right? Trades and coaching changes tend to do these things. They're not changing coaches. Right. That is not, they've been very clear about that. That's not what they want to do. So then that's a trade. That's the other option.
Well, and the crazy thing for me is, and before you get to your next point, the crazy thing is I think Laker fans and you guys and us have a hard time figuring out which Lakers team is the real Lakers team. Is it the team that can dominate the Phoenix Suns and be able to handle the Dallas, you know, be able to handle those sort of teams? Or is this the team that can lose to anybody on a given night and lose badly, well, like the way that they lost to Brooklyn?
You said, like, you know, they blew out Portland last night as expected. I was like, I didn't expect that.
Everybody's been blowing out Portland, is what I've been saying.
But like, you go to a Laker game, like, there's like sort of like a sense of like dread always that what happened against Brooklyn could happen. You know, that's they're inconsistent enough where that type of game is always sort of on the table. Now, but you're right. I mean, like, if we look at their wins over this last stretch, you know, they've beaten the Thunder twice. They have beaten, you know, the Mavericks. They have beaten the Clippers.
Yep.
Like, those are real wins, you know? Like, I think, though, they've also, since winning the in-season tournament, you know, they lost to the Spurs. You know, they lost to the Brooklyn Nets. They are a team that, at times, is unserious, not focused, not completely invested. And when you're that kind of a team and you have slim margins, and they have slim margins, it's hard. You know, I saw a stat today that, I don't have it exactly in front of me, but that basically suggested, you know, that they've played winning basketball this year in games where it's not the second night of a back-to-back, and when they have like fewer than three rotation players out, right? They haven't done well with injuries, and they haven't done well when they're up against the wall. I think that's a fairly telling stat in the sense. Right. And I had this conversation with LeBron after a game recently where we were kind of talking. I think it was after they beat the Thunder. And they lost to Utah too recently, which was sort of like.
But Utah's been surging, mind you. Utah's not the team that they were a month ago.
LeBron not playing, but you know, if you're a team that's like really about it, like, and you know you need to win some games, like, these are games you should win.
Right.
I told LeBron, I think you guys have a good fastball. I don't know how often you can throw it. You know, it's like, and that to me is sort of the interesting part about where they are at. And the, you know, is that they are a team, even I would say, and this is path three, they're a team that is constructed on the heels of a surprising Western Conference playoff run to the finals, Western Conference finals, where they were in the, what do we call it, Zach Lowe jokes about the most competitive sweep in NBA history, is like sort of the sarcastic. But like, they were in like a tight series with Denver in which they lost every important moment, right?
Yes.
So they got beat pretty badly. They are a team, though, that responded to that, and they built a roster in response to that. Now, there are obviously things that they could do to address some of the shortcomings against in a potential showdown with Denver down the road. They still need more size,
yep.
I think, which is where you see something like Daniel Gafford. You know, like, that's where a name like Daniel Gafford checks a box for me, is like another extra sort of big guy to throw at Nikola Jokic, another big body. You know, Jackson Hayes has struggled. Christian Wood has played well lately, but like, he's not a guard Nikola Jokic type of player.
Right.
So you get a little more, you know, with a little more size, a little more strength. But, you know, the third path is sort of, you look at what you have and you say to yourself, like, built to be a much better playoff team than we are a regular season team, which, you know, I think is true when I look at this team. And you say to yourself, well, like, you know, if that's the case and we're only going to get X amount better, you know, if we make a Terry Rozier trade, if we make a Malcolm Brogdon deal and we're putting significant assets into these trades, like, shouldn't we just like maybe try to figure it out?
And that's
the other tricky part, because you have LeBron James sitting there not wanting And I'm not saying he's advocating for change or anything like that, but I think it's fair to say, Vinny, he's not patient. This is not a patient man at this point.
No, I mean, he's like Grandpa LeBron at this stage. Remember Grandpa LeBron in them commercials? Like, that dude was really impatient. And real life LeBron James is probably more impatient than the Grandpa LeBron that was talking about teenage LeBron, don't be jumping in the swimming pool. You know what I mean? Like, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, the gray on his face is not like an illusion. Like, it's actual gray. It ain't salt and pepper. Like, that is gray. His ass is old. And it brings me to like this weird thing that I have problems reconciling, right? The 6 years LeBron has been with the Lakers. I'm just going to throw out numbers and you tell me what you think these numbers are. Are you ready?
I think I know what you're going to say, but I'm ready. Yes.
All right. 21, 20, 23, 24, 11, 24. League ranking somewhere.
That's offensive rating.
Offensive rating every season LeBron James has been with the Lakers. This is a one-man system onto himself. Now, a couple of those years, they had championship-level defenses. The year they won mm-hmm. in 2020, and I think even the next year,
they were really good. And then LeBron James got hurt, Anthony Davis got hurt. Season over.
Season done. I can't reconcile because the raw numbers of LeBron, it says he's a 25-7-7. He looks to be a much better standstill shooter than he's ever been.
Had a very good catch and shoot season. Yeah.
Right. I don't know how, if you're turning your offense over to LeBron, and Anthony Davis has played in virtually every game, and LeBron has played in as many games as you can expect him to play in with no serious injury for either so far. But I can't reconcile why an offense headed by LeBron James is this bad.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, I think one thing, right, I would again point to sort of like...
Is that roster construction or is that somebody in their dating life where, you know what, she's a problem, but wait a minute, who's the common denominator? It is me.
All of it. It's all of it. It's, again, it is, you know, I was having this conversation, it was about Darvin Ham, but where I basically said, like, complex issues don't generally require simple solutions, right? Like that... If you've got something where you can look at, like, say their December, when people were really on Darvin Ham about their December, it was like, no, you're right. Like, there were things that he did not do well. It also came in the context of the team, like, coming out of the in-season tournament. And as a beat writer, and you remember this, like, when you're on the road with the team, like, you feel the travel. Mm-hmm. Like, that December travel, like, it sounds like an excuse and people don't get it. But like when you're on the coast,
it's different. When you're not in a central location, it hurts.
We were in the central time zone mm-hmm. for like 6 day stretches, and then we'd come back to LA for like 2 or 3 days, and then we'd go do it again. We'd come back, go out for 6 days, come back for two, go out for six, come back for two. Like that was all of basically Thanksgiving to Christmas, and guys were exhausted. That was one. It happened. It also happened during cold and flu season, so guys were sick.
Yep.
Like that for sure happened. Austin Reeves really sick at the in-season tournament. LeBron was sick. Like, I mean, this is what happens. It happens on a lot of NBA teams in December and January, but the timing of this was that. And then on top of that, you also saw the Lakers, like the teams they were playing, like it went up. Like they were playing way better teams. They were in Minnesota twice. They were in Oklahoma City twice. You know, they were in Dallas. They had to play... You know, the Boston Celtics, like the quality of the New York Knicks were in there. They mm-hmm. played Chicago at a time when Chicago was red hot.
Yeah.
You know, they're playing much better basketball teams in that stretch. And like, so they were being tested on all these different ways. And the tank was like kind of empty too from the in-season tournament. It wasn't one of those things. Individually, they all sound like excuses. But like being in it, like it was all of that stuff. Then you add in some of the roster issues and the stagnation that you get by having, you know, one of the great one-on-one players of your time of all time on your team, you know, that tends to stagnate the offense a little bit. Like it is just sort of what it is. And I mean, you talk to people about this a lot because this question comes up, Vinny, about kind of the Laker offense. Why isn't it better? And like, some people will be like, well, they don't run enough stuff. Well, you know, what LeBron James team runs a lot of stuff. That's, you know, you hunt a mismatch and you punish it.
Mm-hmm.
Like this has been the game plan for 20 years. Well, they would say, okay, you surround them with shooting. All right. Like that's how, that's the, and I would counter with the Lakers to their, they've tried.
Right.
And it is like, it has not gone well. Malik Beasley, one of the best shooters in the NBA this year, was on the Lakers last year and could not play because he didn't make shots. And now part of that was, did the Lakers run him enough and keep him in rhythm? No. Because when you play with LeBron, you've got to stand and be ready.
You're not going to get a...
It's not a motion offense.
No, you're not. And also at the same time, the ball finds energy. Like, you're not, when LeBron passes you the ball, your job is to shoot. Your job is not to make the swing pass or hold on to it or pat it or anything like that. That ain't what you're here for.
No.
I think that's hard for guys.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, I think some guys are better equipped for it than others. Like, you know, PJ Tucker is probably the best guy that I can think of in my generation of covering the league is in terms of a guy who literally is a standstill shooter who just stands in the corner, waits for the ball, and he might not see the ball for 8-9 straight possessions, but when it swings to him, and I wrote a story about this years ago, but like, and when it swings to him, it's like, make it. You're like functionally a field goal kicker at that point, you know, like where it's, you're not going to make them all. You're not going to make them all, but like when you miss them, it hurts.
You and then the Grandpa LeBron eye roll. And the language and the slumped shoulders and all that, all that, all that stuff. He's very demanding.
Yeah.
And now you can sort of see there's been a slight shift where AD is more of a hub. He's become a much better passer where he can see out of the double teams in ways that I don't think he was equipped to. Like, maybe he didn't know where the double was coming from. Now I think he can see the double and he can make the next pass, and not just the pass to the open guy, but the pass to the right guy. And I think that's why you see like his assist numbers have gone up in that way.
There was a funny interaction video in the locker room the other day where there was LeBron kind of asked a question about that, and he said like, oh, he's been working on it with me. And then his AD kind of like chuckled. LeBron was like, no, like seriously, like we've been working on it. And it makes sense. It does sort of feel like something that could have been addressed, you know, in the two or three previous scenes. But like, it is just, again, this weird sort of intersection where, you know, LeBron ceding a little bit of ground to a player who's like, you know, comfortable, I guess, becoming more comfortable of being that hub.
I mean, can you be more comfortable at year 12?
I mean, it's strange. Like, it's just like all the things that make Anthony Davis the perfect LeBron teammate are things that you would say you could use to hold against him as like a primary guy. You know what I mean? Is that he's comfortable. Like, you know, he's willing to like do the right thing and make the right play without sometimes realizing that the right play is like go dunk on it, like go dominate. Right. You know what I mean? Like, but like he wants to get his teammates involved. You know, there was a stretch last season, Vinny, when LeBron James was out, when the Lakers really made the run post trade deadline, you know, people forget that like a lot of that was without LeBron.
After LeBron broke the record, we didn't see him for like the next month or so.
Well, he tore that ligament in his foot in Dallas and, you know, played injured in the playoffs. That's another kind of factor in this too, is that he wasn't healthy last year in the playoffs, you know, and this year, you know, as of today has been much healthier. You know, he's got the ankle stuff he's always going to deal with, the groin injuries he's always going to deal with, like, you know, the things that are always sort of around. But like, you know, in terms of like tendons, you know, they're all currently intact. And, you know, you put a healthy LeBron in the playoffs last year, maybe you win a game or two against Denver. And you know, maybe things change a little bit. I'll tell you this
as a quick aside. And I don't think you knew this, but there was one person who was severely happy for that Lakers sweep last year. You know who person was? Me. Not because I was rooting against the Lakers. I want people to understand. I had bought Janet Jackson concert tickets 5 months before that. Okay?
Yeah.
Never seen Janet live. And the Janet Jackson concert was going to take place on the day of game 5. So what I said was, whoever wins game one, I want you to win everything else so I can get to the Janet Jackson concert. So I'm on pins and needles in game 4 because that was an insanely close game and an emotional game. I mean, you remember, you were there. And people started texting me Janet Jackson GIFs like midway through the fourth quarter. Yeah, and I was like, don't jinx it. But
these are you were concerned with your pleasure principle and nothing else. That was what was important to you.
There is no way for me to respond to that. I'm just going to let that.
Sorry, I'll make it even worse.
That you guys have you guys who are listening, you can completely understand now.
Give me a beat.
Why Dan is the most frustrating friend that I have. Probably the most frustrating person that we'll ever have on this podcast, mind
you. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. But I was going to say that for that series, right, everybody talks about, man, competitive series. You know what I think of when I think of that series? If not for Lonnie Walker, the fourth quarter against Golden State in game four, we might be having a completely different conversation about that whole series. But they don't have a guy. Maybe D-Lo, I guess, could be the guy that can take the reins of the offense, say, I don't care if you guys are out here. I'm out here on a heater. And I think that takes a lot of gumption. That takes a lot of trust for LeBron to basically seat the offense. I think LeBron was actually on the bench to start that fourth quarter. And then when he came back in, he's going to, of course, punish you and continue to hit the hot hand.
Well, yeah. I mean, that happened a couple times last year in the playoffs, which was really interesting, right? Like, I mean, you mentioned D'Angelo Russell. Lonnie Walker had the fourth quarter against the Warriors. Austin Reeves had game one against Memphis, where he was the closer, right? The I'm him game against them. You had game six again was another big Reeves game. And LeBron was able to sort of pick his spots more. And I think that is sort of like the ideal situation here.
Right. Because you can't, like you said, you can't count on him to carry a whole game.
To go back to, you know, we should talk a little bit about Zach LaVine and kind of how he figures in some of this, because I cannot stress enough. Either I'm being incredibly lied to on this. Like his name does not come up when I talk to people about Laker trades. It just doesn't come up. The contract, the knee concerns seem like they are deal breakers. And it is not somebody they seem to have any interest at all in. Now, if Zach LaVine was packaged with an Alex Caruso, maybe that would change. But I think as of right now, like this is not a name that I hear ever.
Okay.
Unless now, I bring it up.
It's funny. Two things I want to get to while we're still on LeBron, and I want to get to the Buss family. So do not let me forget about that. Okay. You mentioned LeBron at the top. LeBron wants to play with his son. He wants to play with Bronny at USC. We've all seemed to have forgotten.
I think he does. We'll see. Right. I think.
Okay. So let's just say it's not much as a non-negotiable as it appeared to be. Let's leave that there. Even though we've all seemed to have forgotten that Bronny suffered a cardiac arrest, not what, 5 months ago. Okay. Yep. Let's leave that there. Thank goodness he's fine, okay? And actually, thank goodness we didn't see that like we saw DeMar Hamlin. But LeBron is also in an option year. Well, LeBron, A, because of his age, if people are wondering why can't LeBron sign a longer contract, I think past the age of 36 or 38, you cannot sign long-term deals. They're only, I think the CBA only allows you to sign two-year
deals. Two-year extensions, I think, yeah.
Two-year extensions, okay. So LeBron is a master at keeping his leverage. LeBron has an option next year. And of course, we haven't had the discussion about LeBron as free agent or LeBron retiring. We just seem to think that LeBron is going to play forever. All right. Do you think that it is reasonable to expect that LeBron will entertain the thought of free agency after the season?
Yeah, I think he will. I mean, I think that's, I don't think he'll go into anything without, you know, some level of calculus. I mean, this is what LeBron James is a master of, right? Like, so he will survey the landscape. You know, they will have, I'm sure, all sorts of really good information about Bronny and, you know, if and when Bronny declares for the draft, you know, where he'll be selected and if it's a good fit for not only for Bronny, but then potentially for him as well. You know, I do think that it is not lost on anyone that history could also be made, not just by LeBron and Bronny being on the same team, but by playing against each other, that in itself would also, like, maybe it's a little bit of a moving of the goalposts in terms of goals, but like
sharing
an NBA court in itself is something. I think one thing that gets sort of lost sometimes when we talk about LeBron is like he is in asset accumulation mode currently right now. LeBron wants to own an NBA team.
Yes,
this
he does.
Is what he wants to do. NBA teams are very expensive. And just because LeBron has $1 billion, that does not buy you an NBA team. And look, he will not own outright. Obviously, he will partner in some sort of like in some sort of A-Rod style fashion. But like, you know, turning down $50 million to go sign what, the mid-level exception with another team would be the kind of thing LeBron James has not ever entertained in his NBA career. So I think that is like a factor in this as well.
Well, here's the thing. I've talked to some players, I won't say some figures in league circles who believe that for the right person, you will lower the minimums. And by minimums, I mean you will lower the minimums on what it would take to buy or purchase an NBA team.
Maybe.
As far as cash on hand.
For like expansion, for like an expansion purchase or?
I've heard it for both. I've heard someone inquire to me about an existing franchise and say, well, maybe Adam would lower the minimum of cash on hand.
Sure.
Because player X could be, or person X has yeah. that much equity into the league. And it wasn't talking about LeBron, but LeBron was even a much bigger figure than this. LeBron's almost a much bigger figure than anybody, except with the sure. exception of maybe a couple sure. of them. So I could see that being the case. And you also have to be careful of what happened with Michael Jordan with the Wizards and going and playing somewhere for a couple of years. And then all of a sudden, wait, where'd he go? Abe Pollin fired him. That sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's a different world than what it used to be. But Dan, this is also what I wanted to bring to you. Because we used to talk about the Buss family as a whole a lot more a long time ago. And when you consider where LeBron is in his career, where the Lakers are right now, as far as what draft picks they don't want to give up, how they're trying to consider their future. Unlike a lot of these other franchises who have family businesses that bring in money, the Lakers, their Lakers is the family business.
It's the
business for the Buss family. Not just Jeannie, but for some of her brothers who it seems like are they gaining more equity inside the building as far as whether it's basketball decisions or at least being able to have their yeah. voices heard in the room for the future and not just right now and dealing with this iteration of the Lakers?
I mean, I think, you know, one of the
things that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
how the strategy goes?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think like, you know, without obviously knowing, being in the room and knowing exactly like who gets to say what, right?
Right.
And like the three primary figures here, you have Jeannie Buss, who is the governor, right? Mm-hmm. You have Joey Buss, who is the president of the South Bay Lakers and is in charge of those business operations. You have Jesse Buss, who does a lot of their scouting, right? Like that's sort of the three-pronged kind of attack, you know, in terms of like the family and stuff. And, you know, and Jesse's a guy who's gotten a lot of credit for their drafts and stuff like that. But that was sort of the thing that his dad tasked him with at a young age. And he's poured himself into that. So I think, you know, I think on one hand, like as, you know, the younger brothers have matured and have gotten smarter and built up equity there. I do think, though, that there was a recognition that, you know, maybe having so many voices isn't always the best thing. Too. And I'm not saying they're being closed up, but like, you know, you got to add Linda Rambis into the mix and Kurt Rambis are people yeah. that are around. And then there's Rich Paul. And then
I'm not going to be here. Sorry.
And then that there's Magic Johnson.
That just popped out. Yep.
And then, you know, and then there's, you know, who despite not working for the team is still a trusted confidant of Jeannie Buss. And there's Phil Jackson. I mean, like there are a lot of people that are like sort of in the speed dial. And I think they've done a pretty good job, like more so kind of streamlining like coach GM ownership,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I think that's where the strategy kind of lies most firmly.
Right.
But like, it's tricky. It's one of those other things too. It's like, you'd be silly not to trust the people around you. And I do think like those people have valued voices. It is a little more streamlined, I think, than it's been in the past from what I've noticed. And, you know, I think this is an interesting offseason. To be clear, like I do think they will put their picks into play if it's something that makes sense. Like, but I think that if it's something that makes sense, caveat is kind of, I think, the interesting. That's where the interest for me sort of in this next 3 weeks like really lies, is like what actually makes sense. Because to throw to Levine for a second, because I really want to get into this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because like I am of the opinion that like Zach LaVine makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
For what the Lakers are trying to do. That he is a, you know, a shot making, he has size. He's not as old as you think he is. You know
he
what
can
I mean?
Carry, he can carry an offense for stretches that does not involve.
He can
involve.
Win you quarters. He can mm-hmm. win you games. You know, he is a 40-point threat in a real way. And I also kind of think that there is a winning player that exists in there in a complimentary role. And this is, I mean, I've heard Brian Windhorst say this. I was in Tokyo during the Olympics. He looked very comfortable playing on that Olympic team, doing the quote unquote little things. And now look, that's 2 weeks. That's different than 82 games.
I think Zach gets a bad rap, you know, in large part because of where he's played, who he's played with, and the sort of the teams that he's been on. I didn't hear these things when he was playing with Lonzo Ball, and Lonzo Ball was spraying the ball around, and and LaVine and DeMar DeRozan.
So you pair him with a great passer like LeBron James.
Yep. Okay.
So I think in that way, and then you add in the fact that the market for Zach LaVine is such where, I mean, like the Lakers are not the only team that feels this way. You know, I reported this a few weeks ago. I mean, like when I talked to Zach about people around the league, like you start hearing things like that, you know, the Bulls should have to attach an asset to him. That is like the contract is such that it's like, you know, getting off of Zach LaVine might cost the Bulls maybe a second round pick, or maybe it's Dalen Terry or whoever, like that there should be some sort of carrot involved in that. So if you add that to the mix where it's like the price tag is so low for a player that has this, and if you're able to retain your future assets, even if it doesn't work, maybe you can use, say, instead of using that 29 first round pick on DeJounte Murray, if it doesn't work with Zach LaVine, that's your insurance policy. And if you have to use that pick later to peel off Zach LaVine, that's your option. Now, I just think that to date, that strategy has just never gained traction. That I think the feeling is that, you know, the reason the Lakers were able to do a version of that with Russell Westbrook was because Russell Westbrook was an expiring contract.
Right.
You know, Zach LaVine's contract does not expire the way people talk about it until the year 2047. Like just way out there.
Infinity. That they just,
yeah. He signed an infinity max deal.
And the crazy thing is, and you see this around the league all the time. It's almost like a game of telephone. As soon as one person or a group of people say a thing about a player, all of a sudden it becomes gospel. And because a player's contract can be as such, we forget that there's an actual player there.
Yeah, but I mean, again, like, and I think, you know, trying to, and this sounds like circular logic, because like, I, you know, you mentioned the Times Lakers show. I made a very strong pitch for Zach LaVine to Brad Turner, who responded simply by looking at me and saying, "You're stupid." And he's not wrong. Like I think though, you know, you say all this stuff and Zach LaVine has three really good games, like as he's trying to like fill in the gaps around like what they're trying to do. And then now he's out again with an ankle injury, you know, and look, ankles, I generally view as sort of like the fluky injury.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's hard to like really kill a guy for having, you know, a bad ankle.
And you can see those things.
Sure. But like the point sort of generally remains, it's just like, there's just not a lot of trust in him physically out there at that price point, and it makes people very uncomfortable. And it's like, again, I'm shocked when you add the clutch part, the player, like the optimized version of the player and the fit. It just doesn't. Vinny, I cannot stress this enough. It does not come up. And like the one of the things that I have heard though is that if the value on Zach LaVine is so low, right? Like you mentioned this earlier with kind of DeJounte Murray and sort of the desire to save face. I mean, like, the Bulls aren't going to, like, if value is bad, the Bulls aren't just going to give him away at bad.
Right. Nor should they. Nor should they.
Yeah. No. It makes more sense to keep him. Maybe he plays better, or as the contract gets shorter, you know, in theory, like, the ability to move him goes up.
It's a really interesting situation.
Yeah. It's a really, but it's one of the, it is one that comes up a lot when you talk to people about being, like, one of the worst. It's one that comes up.
I promise you, it's a weird thing. A, because no contract is untradeable. And B, we tend to value guys. I understand why in a luxury tax second apron world where the Lakers are pretty much up against the first apron, where they cannot exceed, I think, like maybe another $9 million or something like that.
But the key thing is they don't have the picks. Because they were so pick leveraged in Anthony Davis, because they used picks then after that to get to Dennis Schroeder, you know, they traded Danny Green in a first round pick for Dennis Schroeder because then they used picks again to trade for Russell Westbrook. And then because they had to use a pick again to get off of Russell Westbrook, like they don't really have sort of like the,
they don't have
the
capital.
No contract is untradeable. You're right. But once you start having to attach these future draft assets to a team that, like, by the way, like once this is over, like one of the real wins of the Russell Westbrook trade was that they just got functionally younger.
Right.
Like in a way that they could be more credible in the next sort of 5 years because they won't all be 50.
Right. Right. No, but okay. So quickly, because we got to wrap in a couple minutes and I really want to get you because you covered the Russell Westbrook experience for a year and a half.
Did.
And the Clippers last night, and this, you know, last night the Clippers had this amazing comeback against the Brooklyn Nets. I think that's like
23 nothing with Russell Westbrook playing center for a lot of it.
Yeah, it was just weird. And funny, Kevin Durant playing five for the Suns is a weird thing for them. Now, the Clippers are moving into the Intuit Dome next year. I took a tour during last year's playoffs where they didn't have quite the dome on yet, but it looks like it's been this incredible thing. Do you want to see a Lakers-Clippers series? Is there a path for the Clippers with Kawhi and Tao and presumably Paul George and James Harden being able to resign this summer, or Paul George being able to resign
recently? To what? Is there a path to overtake the Lakers?
No, not overtake the Lakers. I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Is there a path for them to carve out more pieces of turf?
I think a little bit. I think, you know, it's not just that I covered Russell Westbrook. I mean, I covered the Clippers, right, Vinny, for
eight or nine
seasons, right? And they are this really unique thing where they are, at least in Los Angeles, a bigger national story than they are a local story. Mm-hmm. It was a very weird team to cover because of that. Like, I remember I would do a lot of radio interviews. I was on big shows. I was on TV and stuff like that. But like, I did almost no local radio. Like, it just because people didn't talk Clippers, like it That's wasn't amazing. A thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was to the point that the Clippers like functionally bought a sports talk radio station to have a home for Clipper talk, basically. Right.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing. Right. Now, I do think they have plenty of turf carved out. Los Angeles is a big place. I think they market their team well. Their fans are very passionate. You know, I was driving to the Laker game last night and there's a big billboard right by the USC Coliseum that says like Los Angeles made. And it's, you know, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard are on the billboard. Right. Like there's a very direct message. Right. Like they did their uniforms with Mr. Cartoon a couple years ago. They're on buses. Like, you know, it was a much failed sort of streetlights over spotlights type pitch.
Yeah.
But like the general thing was like, you know, we are accessible, like, you know, like they might have Jack Nicholson, we have YG. You know, it was like that was kind of like the sort of pitch, you know. And I think one of the really smart things the Clippers did is they funded youth basketball in Los Angeles, refurbished courts, like, you know, like worked that way. They have, I think, carved out. I mean, they have a home here. You know, there are Clipper fans. Like, it is not what people will tell you. There are no Clipper fans. That's not true. You know, and the new building, I think, will be very cool. It's just still this weird sort of place. I think, obviously, a title potentially could change some of that. I always hold it up to Vinny, the Chicago White Sox, the team that I care about.
Yep.
Who won a World Series in 2005 that people forget about. It happened. It was a great team. And that, like, Google that parade and see what Chicago looked like. You know, for a town supposedly where there's no White Sox fans, like the streets were flooded because people like getting on board with the winner. And I think there would be an element of that here. Go look at what the stands look like now in Chicago at a White Sox game when they're not winning. You know what I mean? And it is a reminder that there is a hierarchy. And I think that's sort of the Clippers space. Now, this team is really good.
Yes, they are.
This is a really good basketball team. It's a very scary basketball team. A lot of depth, a lot of shot making, a lot of physical toughness. You know, weirdly enough, they were a team that has owned the Lakers for the last decade, and they've lost the last two. Lakers have beat them twice this season because up is down and left is right here.
Yeah, and after they won like 12, the Lakers lost like 12 straight to them. It's just like you said, everything is weird, including Dan being late for this podcast because his 4-year-old locked his 2-year-old in a room in which Dan has no key. If you're on YouTube, you see what that is. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Dan Warkey. He is the Lakers beat writer for the LA Times and, of course, the NBA. And he is the host of the Times Lakers show. Anything else you want to promote, Dan, besides your terrible parenting?
I'm also potentially could be your most frustrating friend. too. So reach out to me and let me know if you need some more frustration in your life, like Vinny gets from me when he sees me.
You're not even my most frustrating white friend. Okay. I have a more frustrating white friend, but you're up there. You're on the Mount Rushmore.
I mean, I was looking last night during the halftime of the game on the LL Bean website for leather belts. It's pretty white activity.
That Dan Wicky, ladies and gentlemen. Producer John is probably screaming right now, but Producer John doesn't frustrate me because Producer John is great. Dan, it's just Dan. And I love Dan, and I appreciate Dan for coming on today. Thanks to Producer John and the entire team that works behind the scenes on this podcast. Dan Devine will be back for another episode of Divine Intervention tomorrow, and I will be back on Wednesday for another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.